Blog Talk Radio.
So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media interview, brought to you today by 1-800-DIALDJs.com. If you need live entertainment for your party, wedding, bar mitzvah, or corporate event in the New York, New Jersey, Philadelphia metro area, check out 1-800-DIALDJs.com for a real good time. Okay, so where was I before the commercial? Mr. Media is recorded live from the new media capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida. What form the media takes, print, broadcast, online, or even telepathy, there will always be corporations, organizations, and individuals that need to get the word out about their product, service, or mission. And in that regard, public relations practitioners are like plumbers. They'll always have work maintaining a flow and, in an emergency, unclogging a pipe. that analogy made a lot more sense in rehearsal. Anyway, my guest today is Robert Dillenschneider, founder and chairman of the New York City-based Dillenschneider Group and former president and CEO of one of the world's best-known and most successful public relations agencies, Hill & Knowlton. He's also the author of a new book, The AMA Handbook of Public Relations. AMA, in this case, stands for the American Management Association, by the way. Bob, welcome to Mr. Media.
Mr. Andelman, it's great to be on the show, and should I call you Mr. Andelman or Mr. Media, or what would you like me to call you?
Well, if you let me call you Bob, I'll let you call me Bob.
That sounds great. Let's do it, Bob.
All right. Good to have you here. Let's start with this. Yesterday, Tiger Woods finally came forward and answered a slew of questions about his marital problems and off-the-golf-course behavior. And because he's basically a corporation unto himself, Tiger Inc., I think it's fair game to ask you about. How did he do?
I think Tiger did okay. I mean, a real test of the character of the American public is going to be how they react after Tiger finishes the Masters in a few days. If he does well, and my guess is he'll do well because he's a pretty good player. Are we going to forget what took place? Again, my guess, I am sad to say, is that we probably will forget it. We'll put Tiger's conduct behind us as we put behind us the conduct of John Edwards, the conduct of Bill Clinton, and everybody else. And that's just the way the American psyche goes. And frankly, it's something that I do not have a lot of time for, but I think it's going to happen.
How should his stakeholders feel today about his performance?
Advertisers, potential advertisers, people who want to get on the wagon with him should feel pretty good because he's building back. He's still a young player. He's going to probably win many more Masters and other tournaments. And his only problems now are two. One is the women that he had relationships with, liaisons with, and their efforts to make something of this, and that will happen. And the second is, can he keep himself under control, and did his rehabilitation, whatever it was for, and of course he's not admitting what it was for, did that actually work?
Well, I'm glad you mentioned the women, and I think the number is up to like 15 now. It was interesting yesterday. I listened to Howard Stern a lot, and he started the day with one of Tiger's more ongoing mistresses, Jocelyn James. And I thought that no matter what he said in the afternoon, she did probably more damage to as many people watching or listening to her as watched him, because I mean she went into great detail about what they did, what he promised, what was going on. And I thought, as long as she's out there and the other 14 are out there, it's going to be hard for him to really contain them or control his own message.
That's correct. And she and the other 14 see this as a platform for themselves and to move ahead. But Jennifer Flowers saw that. Monica Lewinsky saw that. Others of the same character saw that. John Edwards' wife has seen that. And fundamentally what has happened to all of them is they've been pushed by the wayside while these figures have gone forward. And I think that is what's going to happen to Tiger. I wish that were not the case. I wish we would all say to ourselves, this guy should be much more repentant and we should all learn lessons. A man came to me the other day, Bob, and he said that his son had cheated on the SATs to get into college. And could I then help his son get into college? And I said, well, let's talk about stopping the kid from cheating first. Then we can get him into college. But he didn't want to do that. He wanted to get him into college.
Does a situation like Tiger's, does it, if you're called in, does it call for bringing in an ethics consultant before a public relations practitioner?
I think really what it calls for is Tiger Woods to be repentant, to spend some money, and to spend some personal capital in repenting and saying, this is not the way people should be conducting themselves in modern society. That's what I think it calls for. And I don't think there's any need to have deep, abiding discussions of ethics or things like that. I think what does need to happen is we all need to realize that he did the wrong thing, and he should not be permitted to get away with it. Many of the techniques, Bob, that are cited in the AMA Handbook on Public Relations are ones that both Tiger and the ladies who he had liaisons with are going to be using. And they are techniques that are going to be reaching out to young people under 35, and they're going to be aimed at influencing those young people. That's going to be what takes place now.
Did you see in his team's handling of this a change in strategy from Thanksgiving when the auto accident happened and the golf clubs and all that to yesterday when he came out and took open questions? Was there a change in strategy?
No question about it. Tiger was quiet and tried to get it behind him, but I think he made the decision he's going to have to go back into the world of golf. And having made that decision, he had to decide what to do, and he's now taking questions because he knows he's going to be public. Look, in a like manner, the Pope has the same problem. The Pope, at least in my view, should go silent. He should say, we've said all we're going to say about pedophilia. We've identified the problem. We're going to deal with it. There's nothing more to say. But what he tries to do is defend his position, and in defending his position, he creates a bigger problem.
Interesting. So you would advise him to just stop talking rather than defending the indefensible?
I would advise him to make one summary statement. He shouldn't have to make it. Somebody should make it for him, which is, this is not about Catholicism, teachings of the church, morals, or any of that. This is about pedophilia. We have found the people. We repent for the victims. We are doing something about this. There is nothing more to say. Let's move on.
Mm. Hey, Bob, I'm going to do something I normally wouldn't do, but there's a lot of static coming off of your line.
Yes, there is. I'm sorry. Shall I call you back another line?
I was going to ask you if you could, and I'll just, you know what, I'll play a commercial for a TV
just
show.
Just give me the number. I'll call you back.
Sure. 646.
Right.
595.
Right.
3135.
Right back to you.
Okay, thanks. All right, so let's just pass a moment here. I tell you what, I've got a commercial here for the TV show V. Let's let that play while Bob calls back in.
Previously on V.
My name is Anna, the aura of peace, always.
Nothing can take away from the excitement as we open our doors to a nation from beyond our imagination.
They're calling themselves the visitors.
The visitors didn't just get here. They've been here for years. They disguised their appearance by cloning human flesh over their own reptilian skin.
They'll take over unless we can stop them.
My partner was one of them. Anyone could be a visitor.
They are animals.
No, not all of them. There's others out there like me.
They're called the Fifth Column.
We'll help.
It's going to be important to me that you don't get involved with the visitors.
I joined the Peace Ambassadors. My mom knew she'd go ballistic.
Tyler's the one. We should use him.
You're doing an excellent job.
Thank you, Mother.
Bring him up to the ship. Tell him I want to meet him.
There are hundreds of images being captured by the damn jacket.
Why don't they just annihilate us and get it over with?
They need us for something.
We want to provide complete medical services to all.
Mr. Decker, may we have a word before you go?
You think I'm going to die?
The good news is, we can heal you.
We've developed a vitamin supplement.
R6. It's what they're putting in their vitamin shot. This is part of something much bigger.
Keep this as evidence. The rest, we destroy.
The warehouse containing all of the R6 compound has been lost.
We have to stop this.
Now, I got some news today. I'm pregnant.
Who are you? How'd you get in here?
Well,
sorry.
If you haven't seen ABC's V, that's a freebie for them. Check it out. thank you for calling back in, Bob.
No, this is a much better line, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It's much clearer. That'd be good. A key focus in your book is using online resources.
Yes.
And I want to wind up the Tiger Woods questioning here, but I wondered if you had any thoughts on how Team Tiger used the web to support him, or if they didn't use it, could they have used it, and would it have helped?
The answer is they used it, but not as completely as they should have. I think that the people who are helping Tiger scrambled over the past week to figure out exactly what they wanted to say and how they wanted to say it. They should have used the web in dramatic ways. Tiger should create a blog. A lot of people would relate to that. There'd be a huge back and forth to the blog. Tiger should use Twitter. I mean, there are a lot of things Tiger should do. And then what really ought to happen, and again, this works for the Pope, but it works for all the other things we talked about, Tiger should get, and his aides should get people who support him to weigh in and indicate their public support of him. That hasn't happened yet. So far, it's Tiger versus the world.
It's been a little tough for anybody to come out and show support for him, because every day you open the paper, there's something new and scandalous, and it's like he's toxic.
Yeah, he is toxic, and it is hard to do. But at the same time, I think there's an opportunity now to get people to step up.
Okay. Well, I wanted to ask you that. Now, let's talk a little bit about the new book, the AMA Handbook of Public Relations. Who's the intended audience for the book?
The intended audience is everybody, but the real intended audience are older men and women above 35, because if they can't figure out how to use cyberspace, they're doomed, and they have to do it. Cyberspace is here to stay. All the techniques in cyberspace are here to stay. Most of the people above 35 have exquisite credentials to be effective in cyberspace. They know how to fashion arguments. They know logic. They know how to write good English sentences. They have things people below 35 don't have. So the people below 35 have command of cyberspace. The people above 35 have command of arguments and language. If you can twin the two, cyberspace and arguments and language, you can be doggone effective on the web.
I think you're starting to address it. I was going to ask you, what is new in this book that maybe the audience for it has not followed before or has not gone for before?
Well, I think it deals with things like if you're attacked, what to do, how to handle many bloggers, when to start blogging, how to penetrate with your blogs, how to take what is conventional in cyberspace now to a new level, where to find research on this, how to train yourself. Those are the basic things that are new and different. And I think a reader will get a lot out of the book.
Now, you've been obviously in the business a good 5 or 6 years now.
Right.
And
thank you, Bob.
You're welcome. And but I was thinking, what advice do you offer in this book that your first boss, whenever that was, would have frowned upon?
Probably everything.
Really?
The change. Well, no, that's too much of a statement. The change that has taken place since I started in this business some 35 years ago is simply mind-boggling. And the ways to communicate and who to communicate to is mind-boggling. When I started in business, Life magazine was still around. Look magazine was still being sold. The Saturday Review is still being sold. None of those things are out there now. And so right now we're looking at very precise ways of reaching individuals, not large groups of people, with very precise messages instead of big, strong, bold messages, and finding a way, a compelling way, to get them to take action. It's a very, very different game today.
Would that first boss of yours even have recognized public relations today?
I think he was a very smart man. His name was Richard Darrow, and he would have adapted and probably been way ahead of me. every step of the way. So the answer is probably yes. But many of the people who surrounded him would not, and they would be scratching their heads saying, what are these young people doing? Why are they moving at the space? And are these people really not doing things that they should be doing, and so on and so forth? I think that somebody who says that is not very smart today. This is a broad, brand new era, and we have to figure out a way to deal with it.
When did you personally accept that there was this dramatic change happening? And did you, you know, did you resist some of this stuff for a while and then finally go, oh, you know what, I guess it's time?
I fought it like mad, and to some degree I'm still fighting it. I think that I'm a great believer. If I can sit across the table from somebody and give them a compelling argument that moves them to take an action, that's more effective than anything I could do in cyberspace. And I try to do that whenever I possibly can. So my practice, my life, has really developed down into a very precise focus on things that I think is kind of new in terms of this. But when cyberspace first began, I remember the article in Fortune magazine that signaled the beginning of the personal computer. I looked at it and I said, this means nothing. Well, of course, it was a huge change. And now virtually every day something happens. What I think is fascinating is that the iPod has come out, and Steve Jobs is going to sell a lot of those iPods. But the iPod is really a convenience tool. It doesn't do anything new. It simply brings things together in a space, which has value, but it doesn't do anything new. We're looking for the next new thing. I talked with a man yesterday, Bob, about the end of the digital age, and he wants to advance the idea of the end of the digital age. And I said, okay, so if the digital age is over, what's next? And he's thinking about that.
Yeah, well, that would be the question, right? Yeah.
That's the question, exactly.
I know we have this habit of always, once something is declared as happening, then there's always that person who's going to declare the end of it. But you can't declare the end of something until you can declare what's going to follow it.
For sure.
And along the same line, I wanted to ask you, what's been the biggest change in the art of public relations during the course of your career?
The move from the mass to the precise is the biggest change. The legitimacy of the function. The fact that public relations, when I began, was kind of an add-on and people didn't think it was very important. Today it's critical to virtually everybody. And everything we discuss, from Tiger Woods to a CEO to a stock price and everything in between, is now driven by public relations. Public relations, in many ways, has eclipsed advertising. Advertising used to be, in the days of David Ogilvy, selling product benefits. You could read about a soap or a car or a toothpaste, and you'd read about the product benefit. Doesn't happen today. Now you see some young person, flashy, with a big smile, but there's no product benefit to that. Things have changed dramatically.
Speaking of young people, do you have people on your staff who speak a language that you don't understand?
They're in here every day. There was one just before this interview, and we spent a few minutes, and I tried to decipher what she was saying. She's 25. She's a Phi Beta Kappa from Georgetown. Very smart person. We got to the conclusion, and she was right. So the answer is yes. There are some really brilliant young people out there, and older people need to take the time to listen to them and tolerate them and grab their message and take it forward.
And what do CEOs most often, I don't mean you, maybe it's a bad transition here, but what do CEOs most often misunderstand or get wrong about public relations in the Internet era?
Bob, that's a great question. CEOs, first of all, don't understand the Internet. Most CEOs, men and women, are above 50, and they don't really get it at this point. They know it's there, but they don't fully understand the impact. That's one. Number two is they see it as a negative. They don't see it as a positive. They see it as something they have to defend against, they have to worry about, and they are very concerned about that. And they search for ways to deal with it. For example, there was a rumor put on the net the other day that a CEO client of ours was having an affair with a woman in his company. He called. He was very upset. I would have been too. But his whole focus was how to deal with that rather than how to address it positively.
Great timing that you've got rumor control, since I know that's a big part of the book.
There's an awful lot of need for rumor control today. With the CEO in this case, I said to him, the first question I asked him was, is it true? And he said, no, it wasn't true. And I said, then you should stand in public positions with this woman in front of lots of people and let them see you and see you rewarding and supporting her professional experience and excellence.
And I have to ask, because so many times, I mean, when presented with that question, is it true, men will lie. Are you, you know, how do you know if he's, I guess you'll know after the fact if he was telling the truth or not.
It's very tough. I mean, I tend to take people at face value, and I'm wrong 50% of the time. So you're correct. People just don't tell the truth in many cases. That in itself is a problem. People shade things. They add things to their background, their accomplishments that aren't really there. There was a man in Arizona one time, I'll never forget this, I was visiting him. He was the head of one of the local newspapers, highly regarded in the city. If you sat in his office, on the wall were one bit of recognition after another, swords he'd received from the Duke of Malta, all these things. It was all a fraud. None of it actually happened. He made it up.
What, as you look back, and this could be something either with Hill and Knowlton or with the Dylan Snyder Group, but is there a particular case that you worked on that you're extremely proud of, that you proud of the result of? Maybe it was something immediate, or maybe it was a long term kind of thing. But you know, if you were to get together with some of your counterparts, that you guys would talk about, and you say, yeah, that's the thing that, boy, we did a hell of a job on that.
I think the recall of Tylenol in the Johnson & Johnson days was a huge thing. That was one of the first product recalls. And when Tylenol was deemed by the public to have serious problems, J&J saw a $50 billion market going away. And we worked very hard at it, turned it around, and today Tylenol is serving lots and lots of people. That probably is one of the most successful. But there are many, many others that are equally successful. And it, you know, there are going to be more given what's taking place now in cyberspace. It's going to be an extraordinary period ahead.
Well, people still look back to the Tylenol, the handling of that. That obviously it was way beyond the J&J's ability to control what happened in terms of the tampering.
Right.
But the way it came back and handled it with the public, it obviously. It set a high mark, I think, for public relations.
It did set a high mark. I mean, that was the beginning now of tamper-proof packaging. I mean, almost all products have that today because of the Tylenol experience. And I have to give the Johnson & Johnson people a lot of credit. They had the courage to step up and say, we have a problem, we're going to address it, and we're going to be aggressive about it. And they did it. They did not hide from the problem. And that's the reason they were successful.
I remember I grew up in the Central Jersey area, New Brunswick, North Brunswick area, where Johnson & Johnson's headquartered. And at the time, I remember it had an impact there beyond just the product and the financial losses. It really hit home in the community. So it was, you know, I mean, I was pretty young, but it was still something that everyone was aware of, the impact and the turnaround. How did handling that affect your career? Was that a huge boost?
Well, it was a boost, but it's the old story. You're as good as what happened yesterday, and you have to produce virtually every day. So Peter Grace, the former head of Grace & Company, once taught me a lesson. He said, run scared on everything. Assume that whatever you just did isn't good enough, and you better top it the next time around. And he's exactly right. Satchel Paige used to say, don't look back, somebody might be gaining on you. So I think all of us out there need to push forward. And in this very challenging time in America right now, this is a critical thing to do for all of us.
And what about the flip side of that question? And you don't have to mention a client by name, because you probably wouldn't want to, but what about a situation that just went sour? It just didn't work. Can you think of one of those?
I'll mention the client. It was a company called Tyco and a man named Dennis Kozlowski. Mm-hmm. And famous. And I went over and I saw Kozlowski, and I said, we want to do a forensic audit of your books. We want to bring in this case, a team of ethics consultants and look at what Tyco has done, and we want to issue a report that exonerates you. It was too late to do it. They were already over the pale.
Jeez.
Dennis ended up going to jail. The company had serious problems.
I guess it's good they didn't have you do that.
Yeah, well, it was too late to do it. And he said with a kind of a woeful look on his face, it's too late.
Oh, yeah, wow. And what... what's a legitimate reason for a company to fire its PR firm?
I think that ethical reasons are right at the very top of that list.
Mm-hmm.
I think that if there has been a breach in ethics that or a breaking of the law, it should be fired. We represented a company that took a breather from us a number of years ago and went to another competing firm, and they wanted to see how the other firm did. Well, the other firm got ready to make a major announcement. They tipped the press in advance, and the company then decided not to make the announcement. The press, because they'd been tipped in advance, went public with the story. This company dismissed the PR firm immediately. It was just bad judgment, and it was frankly illegal.
Wow.
Those things shouldn't happen.
Go ahead. Oh, well, what? Let me ask you this. So if let's say that I'm the CEO of a company. I've had the same PR firm for the last 10 years, which basically covers that period of time when the Internet and everything has taken off. And I fire them for whatever reason, for cause or just because it's a whim, whatever it may be.
Sure.
What do I look for today in a firm that maybe I wouldn't have looked for 10 years ago?
The first thing you do is you define what you need. Do you need better appreciation of the stock and the way it's going? Do you need to recruit engineers to help you develop new techniques? Do you need to reach out around the globe to develop your globalization? So you determine what you need. Then you say to the firm, can you match up your capabilities, your assets, with what I need? And, of course, they're going to say yes. Then you ask the critical question, who will work on the business? Will Bob Andelman work on the business? Bob, if you'll work on the business and guarantee me we'll do this, you'll have the business. If you can't guarantee this, you won't. We want Bob Andelman because he knows what he's doing. Those are big factors. Because what frequently happens is a PR firm will get the business. I've seen this happen many, many times. And they will then assign people that the client never even met or heard of to handle the business. Not a good experience.
Probably not.
Right.
Well, Bob, last question. Can you think of three key takeaways from this book? And I'll repeat the title. It's the AMA Handbook of Public Relations. Three key takeaways that you would want people to know about or think about or give them a good reason to go pick it up?
I can, Bob, and thank you. One is you'd better understand that if you don't embrace cyberspace, you're washed up, number one.
Mm.
Number two is, as you embrace cyberspace, you also better understand that those courses you took in high school and college that taught you logic and how to write are critical, because you'll have to develop compelling arguments to launch your message into cyberspace. And number three, the world of cyberspace is changing virtually every day, and you're going to be unable to keep up with it every day, just as too much going on. But you should make an effort to be as current as you possibly can, because what is happening on the 6th of April is going to be different on the 6th of June.
Mm.
I think those three messages are ones I want to leave with people, Bob. And I must tell you how much I appreciate the chance to be on your program.
My pleasure. My pleasure. It's good to have you here. I like to have people know what they're talking about. And folks, listen, you can find Robert Dillon-Snyder's new book, The AMA Handbook of Public Relations, in great bookstores everywhere, or you can order it online at MrMedia.com, MRMedia.com. You can also learn more about his firm at www.dillonschneider.com. I will spell that for you, even though it's a lot simpler than Andelman. I will spell it. It's DILENSCHNEIDER.com. And Bob, can people find you on Twitter or Facebook? Have we won you over that much?
Facebook, I'm not involved in, but Twitter, you'll see me. So I'm out there and twittering back and forth, just as everybody else is.
Very good. Very good. Okay. Well, Bob, thank you so much for coming on the show today. Fascinating to talk to you about all the things that we did, and best of luck with the book.
Yeah, thank you very much. It's great to be with you and Mr. Media, and I wish you well with the show.
Thank you very much, sir. Take care.
Take care.
Bye-bye. And folks, for more original interviews on business topics, please surf over to our main website, www.mrmedia.com. That's where you can listen to my earlier conversations with the founder of Four Seasons Hotels and Resorts, Isidore Sharp, Roto-Rooter president, Rick Arquilla. Oh, my God, I can't say it. Rick Arquilla, as well as Guy Kawasaki of AllTop.com and many more. And please take advantage of this great offer for Mr. Media Radio listeners. Go to www.audiblepodcast.com/mrmedia to get a free audiobook download of your choice when you sign up today. Again, that's www.audiblepodcast.com/mrmedia, Mr. Media, for your free audiobook. Subscribe to Mr. Media on iTunes and you'll never miss a show. Just search Mr. Media Interviews from within iTunes and subscribe for free. You can also listen with a piece of string and a tin can in many locations. If you've got an idea for a guest, email me directly at bob@andelman.com. You can also follow me on Facebook or on Twitter, www.twitter.com/andelman or facebook.com/andelman. Thanks so much for joining us today. Always appreciate when you give up a little piece of your day and come spend it with us. Thanks for listening, everybody.